it's blowing up Spotify, and I'm sure every other platform. But I mean, the big surprise was it's a 16 track album, and then after Midnight, she dropped this thing called The Anthology, which is another 15 tracks. So it's almost like getting three albums in one. It's 2 hours of music.
Man, you know, this is so much different than back in the day where you had an album with, what, four cuts on one side and four on the other? No more than 10.
The record company, because we need to hold some stuff.
That's right.
Yeah, no, you're right. But then you would release an album every 6 months.
Yeah,
right?
That's right.
I mean, that's what this, you know, she's pretty consistent. She's every 2 years or so, and this is huge, and the Swifties are going crazy.
Going crazy. I saw something online that Target had like the spots waiting for, you know, the actual CDs eventually coming. And someone figured out that there were two spots, one for the Tortured Poets Department and one for something else. And they were like, what is this?
It's a double.
Yeah. People are freaking out.
Yeah. I will tell you, I mean, we were looking for an up-tempo. Just punch up Florida, will you, Jason? This is probably the most up-tempo number
You can beat the heat if you beat the charges too. They said I was a cheat. I guess it must be true.
So that's a duet with Florence and the Machine. But by and large, if you're looking for something up-tempo, kind of happy on a Friday morning like we were, you won't find it here. This is a lot
of
angst.
This is Tortured Poets. This is an upbeat poet.
Exactly. Yes.
When you look at it like that, Jamie, I guess so.
When you drop 31 tracks, can you just give me one, Taylor?
I'm no Taylor expert, but whatever she's feeling in this moment of writing is what comes out through her music.
Yeah. Well, and there was the public breakup during the Eras tour, and apparently there is a lot of reflection on that. And someone said, yeah, it's a breakup album. And I want to say, isn't every one of them a breakup album?
No.
I mean, okay. Because it just seems like that.
No, I get what you're saying, but.
Anyway, it is out, and it is huge. And interesting that, you know, they put some space between Bey's album and this album, right? Seem to coordinate a little bit.
I wonder how that happened.
Yeah, so, you know, everybody wants to try to build a rivalry between
those two. No, they're supporting each other.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and that's a good thing.
We're going to talk to a real Swiftie later on in the show.
Someone who really, really knows.
Who really knows.
I hope she didn't hear when I referenced in the hallway that I thought it was a little on the dull side. I'll get my Friday come up.
Send your emails to Guy Gordon.
So obviously Israel striking back is the big news of the morning, breaking overnight. It was a very limited in scope. This clearly they were very mindful not to escalate, not to make this into a regional conflict. One of the things that sticks out is that there's a report in the New York Times that these drones that struck the Isfahan region, which is there's some nuclear facilities there, they weren't hit. There's also some very high-profile tourist mosques, things like that. They weren't hit. But the drones came from within the borders of Iran. So maybe it wasn't this massive retaliation that was anticipated, but it was a little bit like someone putting a knife to your throat and saying, and I came into your house.
Yeah.
Mm. I mean,
that's a message.
This is, I think, in terms of capability.
What could have been done.
Exactly. I think Israel really was quite artful and brilliant here in saying this could have been much worse and we did it under your air defenses. So there. But it's originally it was going to be widespread in scope. They didn't do it. We're awaiting some words from Secretary of State Antony Blinken about that. But both sides, even on Iranian state media, no outrage, no indignation. This is after the Iranian foreign minister had said the other day that there would be big payback if there was anything that happened. Nothing like that. In fact, they're kind of scoffing and ridiculing.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing.
Yeah, because no one wants a wider conflict. Again, according to the New York Times, Israeli leaders came close to ordering widespread strikes on Iran, but cooler heads prevailed as they waited. And because there wasn't that much damage from the Iranian drones, they were able to wait and do this instead of a widespread strike.
Yeah, and we're still looking for clarity on what the real targets were here, but it's quite possible that some of the drone facilities in Iran, but there is a missile manufacturing facility in this Isfahan province. the kind of medium range armaments that were launched at Israel. So it's, but again, I think there was in some circles hope that they would hit a refinery. Didn't happen. Brent crude bumped up to $90 a barrel for a minute, fell right back. So it doesn't look like it's going to have a big impact on our gas prices either. Mike Duggan making good on a promise that he made in the State of the City.
Yes, listen, Mike Duggan's pledge to eliminate abandoned illegal vehicles from Detroit gained some swift action as the Detroit Police Department launched a towing initiative within 24 hours of the mayor's speech. Captain Jason Adams clarifying the goal, not vehicle confiscation, but neighborhood improvement. Despite the progress, beautifying the city remains a gradual effort. Last year saw over 14,000 towed vehicles, 4,500 more already removed in 2024. And the mayor's message against vehicle storage on lawns resonated, emphasizing the city's crackdown on such practices. A dedicated team of parking and code enforcement officers are on the ground issuing tickets to non-compliant vehicles. While over 5,200 vehicles faced tickets this year, the majority were relocated by owners. Captain Adams affirmed their commitment to public service and neighborhood enhancement. Toward this end, impounded vehicles are slated for auctioning or scrapping, marking significant progress in Detroit's urban renewal efforts.
And in terms of the housing market, the market's all trending down today on the futures. The mortgage rates topped 7% yesterday, went over 7% for the first time in a long time. And housing sales in March fell 4.3%. That's the worst in 16 months.
Wrong direction.
Yeah, yes. The trend isn't good there. The trend in Detroit, though, everything looking up, arrows up. And how about those Lions unis?
So this was not the big reveal they had hoped in the evening because it leaked on the internet early. I don't know how that happened, but if you take a look at the logos, not much changed. Well, the uniforms, not much change with the logo, the color scheme. They just sort of defined the colors
more block.
Yeah,
freshening, as they say in the auto industry.
A little bit. All that I think is just kind of who cares? But the gray alternates gone, black jerseys now. And this is something that I guess Dan Campbell lobbied for.
Yeah, it smells like a little Dan Campbell.
Give me like a little Dan sinister Campbell. Look.
Yes.
Campbell,
wear the black hat sometimes.
Yeah,
right?
Campbell wore the black when he was here. And I guess way back in 2021, he was talking to Rod Wood during the draft and said, when can we bring those back? And I guess Rod Wood said to him, when you win a division. So here we are.
Okay. There you go. So a little bit of even some grit in the color scheme.
Yes.
Right?
And if you want to look at all the details, they're going to have 313, you know, on the inside or One Pride on the inside. So just like little things here or there. If it gets the team hype, great.
Will they still have the patch for William Clay? Is that still on there?
That's a good question, Lloyd. I'm not 100% sure on that.
And also Brad Holmes, kind of shaking things a little ahead of the draft. I mean, building the anticipation.
Yeah,
Brad pick 28.
He said he will apologize to fans if they trade down. But he also just talked about how great it is to have the draft in Detroit.
I'm so excited about the draft being in Detroit. Yeah, I really am. It's just another opportunity for our franchise, our city, the world to kind of migrate to downtown Detroit. We have multiple major NFL markets that are within driving distance, so I expect it to be pretty packed. I'm excited for the local businesses. I think it's gonna be really exciting.
Yeah.
Trade up, trade down. I mean, it couldn't be more mysterious, right?
Well, he also said they have a lot of flexibility because they feel like they're in a good spot, which is also good.
Yeah. By the way, Kirby Joseph on the runway last night,
him a different
awesome.
Job. Yeah. Runway model.
When we come back, foreign aid for Israel, Ukraine, Taiwan, the Pacific Rim, will it move this weekend? And what price might the speaker pay for shepherding it through? Fox News next on Local 4, next on JR Morning.
With tensions rising globally, particularly in regions like Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan, the U.S. Congress, finds itself at a critical juncture. After months of deadlock, lawmakers are edging closer to a crucial vote on legislation aimed at providing much-needed security assistance to these nations. Let's get the latest on Capitol Hill from Ryan Smeltz, Fox News radio correspondent and WJR contributor who joins us on the JR Morning Live line. Good morning, Ryan.
Hey, good morning, Lloyd.
So how close are they to a deal? And I'm sure they're going to need the Democrats to get it over the hump.
Yeah, right. So you had what was called the rule vote yesterday out of committee. And this rules committee meeting went on from, I believe it started around 10 o'clock and didn't end until after midnight. So after now they've cleared that hurdle, the next step is going to be getting this procedural vote done called the rule vote on the House floor. And traditionally, when we talk about rule votes, the opposing party or the minority party does not vote for it. The majority party does vote for it, no matter what an individual lawmaker is going to finally do on the floor. But now that you have the Freedom Caucus actively tanking or trying to tank the rule vote, Democrats are going to have to vote for this procedural vote.
I think we just got Ryan back. Just conclude your thought there, Ryan, because we kind of missed you a little bit there.
Okay, yeah. So as I was saying that normally with these rule votes, the minority party does not vote for them, even if they're going to vote for the final bill. And with the Freedom Caucus actively trying to tank the rule vote, that means Democrats are going to have to get on board and vote for this procedural hurdle and then eventually move forward from there.
Ryan, what's the difference between these bills and what the Senate approved? The amount of money is the same, but there's some nuance.
Yeah, the money is relatively similar, and it's pretty much exactly what the Biden administration asked for. I think it's the how that they're going about this that's mainly different, and that's that they're going to vote on all of them separately. So each one will get its own vote, and whatever passes will then be bundled together and sent back to the Senate. But there is a fourth bill that's included in this one, and that's going to be a kind of like a miscellaneous national security package. Then that will include legislation to pretty much force TikTok to divest its stake in ByteDance, or for ByteDance to divest its stake in TikTok, with some changes to that. Originally, it would require that them to do it within 6 months. This new bill makes it a total of a year.
In terms of the border, Chip Roy, who is a pretty loud voice in the Freedom Caucus, has said you don't even mention Ukraine unless you're going to talk southern border. What efforts might be made to try to shoehorn a border bill into this?
Well, it looks like if they're going to address the southern border, Speaker Johnson has said that he wants to have a separate border bill voted on, but I don't believe that would be included in the package. And obviously, that's why he's getting a lot of pushback from some of these conservative members, because the plan that he's rolling out is not going to address the border, even though Johnson has said constantly since he became speaker that the Republican-controlled Congress would not pass a foreign aid bill unless the southern border was secure, and Johnson has somewhat changed his stance on that.
Has the motion to vacate picked up any additional steam?
I don't think we've added any new members to it. The one thing you are hearing now, and you saw this yesterday with Matt Gaetz and Lauren Boebert, mm-hmm. they're now kind of flirting with the idea of the motion to vacate, because there was reporting that a number of members wanted to change the motion to vacate rule as part of this foreign aid package. But Speaker Johnson came out yesterday evening, said he is not going to do that. So we need to see where Gaetz now stands on that. But there are a number of members who may be teasing the idea, but in terms of those who've actually signed on to it, we still only have two of them.
So will they vote on Saturday? Is that
That's
the timing?
The plan, yes. It looks like they will, yeah.
So, I mean, one would hope, as Speaker Johnson has said, that folks want to be on the right side of history here and don't want to be on the sidelines should Ukraine fall. But that doesn't mean that Democrats aren't going to ask for some paybacks from him to get their support for that. Do we know what kind of horse trading is going on?
Well, there might not need to be any type of horse trading. I mean, some of the Democrats have floated the idea of potentially protecting Johnson. And I mean, the Democrats in many ways are getting everything that they want here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've asked for the Senate or for the House to approve of what the Senate requested or what the White House requested for over a month now. And it's been sitting on Speaker Johnson's desk. And now we're in a situation where he's rolled out these bills that pretty much are going to approve of what the White House originally requested. The only difference is just that they're voting on them separately and they're just not all bundled together.
I know the former president, from what I understand, kind of jumped in asking, you know, why isn't Europe giving more money to Ukraine and why is it the United States? He's still being a part of this?
I think he is. I'm not quite sure if he's put in any efforts to totally tank this effort just yet. You know, one person that this package did get an endorsement from is Mike Pompeo, the former Secretary of State under the Trump administration. There's been a couple of other Trump administration officials who come out and endorse the package too. So certainly that plays into it. And one thing that is going to be a little bit different with this plan too, that I didn't address earlier, is that I believe there is a loan program for Ukraine that is attached to it. So
right.
Some of this money the United States would get back. And Speaker Johnson has said that former President Trump does approve of that plan.
Well, presumably would get back, but they also have a habit of sometimes forgiving these
They're
things down the road.
Loans.
Yes, forgivable loans.
I'd
like to get me one of those.
These ones are forgivable. These ones are forgivable for a pretty extensive amount of time, too.
If anybody, if either on the congressional side or from the White House, have you heard any rumblings? Obviously, Israel retaliated against Iran overnight, but it was very limited in its scope. It seems that everybody wants to try to avoid any escalation to a region-wide conflict. Any feedback on that about being pleased at the attack that Israel took?
Yeah, no, this all happened very late. The extent of the feedback I've seen is there have been some trolling of Iran's top leader from some members on social media, but that's the extent I've seen so far.
Okay.
All right. Ryan Smells, Fox News Radio correspondent, WJR contributor. Always a pleasure speaking with you. Have a great weekend.
Hey, have a great weekend, guys. I'll probably be working, but take
Oh, boy, he is always in the midst. Well, coming up at 6:35, General Motors starting to sell products to let people power their homes using their GM electric vehicles. We'll speak with the director of GM Energy coming up next at 6:35 on JR Morning.
We know that there has been a lot of angst about charging stations and making sure the public infrastructure for charging is more robust and is expanded. But let's face it, most of the people that make the EV transition, that their home is going to be their charging station and potentially much, much more. General Motors, specifically GM Energy, rolling out a new package of accessories and offerings to make that transition easier. And we welcome in Derek Sequeira, director of GM Energy, to tell us about it. Derek, good morning. Great to have you with us. Tell me about this bundle that you're putting together, because, I mean, we want things to be able to go not just one way, not just energy going into the car, but we want to be able to reverse that as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But first, let me point out that you hit the nail on the head. As we transition into electric vehicles, one of the most critical pieces of that customer experience and really being able to get the most out of your electric vehicle is investing in really good home charging. There are stats out there showing that over 80% of your electric vehicle charging will be done at home, which is a big mind shift, right, from your gas-powered vehicle and going to the gas station to fill up. Remember, with an EV, you're bringing it home, it's charging overnight, just like your phone. So what we want to do with GM Energy is really take advantage of that. And as customers are beginning to make that EV transition, we want to unlock more value out of that electric vehicle and out of the home. And that's where the GM Energy products come into play. We're pioneering solutions for every type of customer. And in this case, we're focused on the retail home customer.
And
the
amount of
energy that you're driving home in your Silverado EV can be unlocked. We've been focusing on putting energy into the vehicle, but now what if I told you with our products, you can now pull that energy out of the vehicle and use it when you need it the most. That's where GM Energy comes into play with our full product ecosystem that introduces the concept of bi-directional charging to take the energy stored sitting in your driveway and put it back to your home.
And Derek, with these, you know, with the storms we've had and power outages, this really kind of, you know, helps mitigate those weather-related power outages too.
Absolutely. Let me give you a real life example. I think we all remember the huge storm 2 days ago in the afternoon. We were on a call and one of our engineers was there at her home in Troy and her power went out. She said, "Hey, hold on. I got to go plug my vehicle in." Went, plugged your vehicle in, boom, power back on. And that's where our product ecosystem really comes into play. As she was getting her home back and running, she could hear the neighbors dragging out their gas-powered generators, mm-hmm. causing the noise pollution. With our system, you've got that ready to go. Just plug in your vehicle, start discharging power, quiet, maintenance-free. That's where we believe we've got a really great sustainable solution for you.
Derek, how long could you power a whole house this way?
Hey, great question. And it's really all dependent on the vehicle and what types of loads you want to back up. You know, our system on minimal loads on a full Silverado RST battery can get you up to 21 days of backup power. But if you wanted to back up more loads, heavier loads in your home, obviously that's going to diminish depending on what you choose to back up and run. So, of course, it varies depending on the vehicle and depending on the size of the loads within your home.
So if the energy is moving from the car to your house, then can you still drive your car? These are very low-level questions, I know, but I'm asking for a friend.
So as you're powering your home, you need to have your car plugged in. But there are going to be times when, hey, I need to go out and pick up some milk
right.
while an outage is occurring. Not now, but in the near future, we are going to be also releasing, as part of our product ecosystem, stationary energy storage batteries that'll give you that extra flexibility. So you know that, okay, I can leave with my vehicle and my home's still going to be powered.
Yeah, at CES, I saw a ton of portable battery stacks that you could have, you know, in a corner of your garage. So
this reminds me of the old, like, TV days with the guys and the cameras and the battery packs.
With the battery packs or the belts, yeah. You know, they waddled around with, yeah. In terms of the affordability of this, Derek, as you package and bundle these things, If I wanted kind of a soup to nuts supercharging system in my home, what might it cost me when you put together these options packages?
Yeah, so we have flexible packages, and what we've developed really is within the price range of other solutions that are out there, whether you're talking about a natural gas generator or other comparable battery storage solutions. So we've got full pricing available, gmenergy.gm.com, where you can take a look at the different options. Plus, you can also speak to one of our energy specialists that can really walk you through what system would be perfect for your use and then understand how much the product and installation is going to cost you. But where we're really focused is on making sure that we've got this great customer experience, so that you can unlock the value you've already spent on your electric vehicle, your Silverado RST, and extending that to having vehicle-to-home capability.
So the products are right now are only compatible with the Silverado at this point. Will it be eventually across the board?
Yeah, so we are launching with the Silverado RST, but we've come out and said that by 2026, we're going to extend capability to the remainder of our new Ultium-based vehicle. So we'll start with the truck and then continue on and expand across our Ultium vehicle portfolio.
Great stuff, Derek. Derek Sequeira, thanks very much, Director of GM Energy, as they make sure that you're not only ready to electrify on the road, but also to power your home during those intermittent power outages that seem, doggone it, just too common. But this is a much more affordable solution mm-hmm. to one of those big
right.
Generac, you know, systems.
Yeah.
Derek, thanks so much.
Hey, thank you for having me this morning.
Good to have you. When we come back, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Getting a little poke in the eye from about 15 members of his own family, led by no less than his sister. But he is now officially on the ballot in Michigan. What does that mean going forward, having that third candidate? We'll talk to Jason Rowe next on JR Morning.
And with my hero, President Joe Biden.
That is Carrie Kennedy, daughter of former Attorney General Robert F. Kennedy, niece of the former president, JFK, and sister of a current presidential candidate, and she is endorsing Joe Biden, as did about 15 members of her family. Guys, they're not really into RFK's candidacy. They certainly don't support what he stands for, and they made that very clear yesterday.
Yeah, quite a repudiation from your own family.
Right.
Yeah. But that's, and it's quite a show of Kennedy support. I don't know if they carry the same kind of weight that they once did, whether the Kennedy mystique is still as vibrant as it once was, whether it means a lot. But let's find out from an expert.
Yeah, we have Jason Rowe, principal of Rowe Strategic, on the phone. Let's start, Jason, with the familial problems here for RFK. What do you think?
Well, it's a Democratic family. It always has been. And, they are the royalty of Democratic politics. And RFK, obviously, in polling has benefited from the familiarity with the name, even though people probably don't necessarily understand his politics, and that and some of the positions he takes today are not consistent with today's Democratic Party. They might very well be with what his father and his uncle's politics were 50 years ago. But, you know, today's Democratic Party is much different, and RFK is not very representative of it, but the name still gives them something.
Jason, is it a game changer? I mean, now that the family has endorsed Joe Biden, those who are going to vote for RFK, are they still going to vote for RFK? Or do they say, well, since, you know, the Klan is for Biden, I'm going to switch?
No, actually, I think it has the risk of backfiring. And I'll give you an example that I lived through. I had a congressman who was a client of mine from Arizona a few years ago, and he tended to say some things that were a little wacky now and then. And in the election, his siblings all got together and endorsed his opponent. And, at first we thought, oh, this is going to be, you know, tragic. This is going to be really bad. Well, it was actually quite different. It was, you know, during the 2016 election with Hillary Clinton versus Donald Trump. And the reaction ended up being beneficial to us because it demonstrated that in this polarized election, and things were a lot less polarized than they are today. That was kind of the beginning of, I think, some of the polarization that we see in the country's politics right now. People were actually offended that family members would put their political politics or their politics ahead of family. And it ended up being a boost to us. And I know, one thing I do for my clients is their direct mail fundraising. And we did a mailing on this, and it was actually the best fundraising mailing that we did because people were so offended that family members did that. And I know just watching Kerry Kennedy's comments, I just was stunned that the family would do that. It'd be one thing if they just said, you know, we're sticking with the Democrat, you know, Joe Biden, to do a press conference and behave the way they did. I was pretty stunned. I mean, this is family after all. And, you know, you can demonstrate that, you know, you don't support your family member, but to go do a press conference and wrap yourself around Joe Biden the way they did, I thought came across pretty offensive.
Obviously, a campaign that isn't officially on the ballot is a tree falling in the woods with no one to hear it. So he's on the natural law party part of the ballot here in the state of Michigan. How significant is that? He's been polling around 10-12% in some battleground states. What's the upside?
Well, he represents none of the above. We know that no one's particularly satisfied with the choices we have from the two major parties. So I think for people that are not necessarily partisan, this is an option that isn't Joe Biden or Donald Trump. And I think for particularly Arab voters that have not historically been particularly partisan, looking for an alternative because of their feelings about what's happening in Gaza right now, that's a place for Arab voters to go. For some progressives that are upset about that, you know, he is still a liberal Democrat on most issues. He could be a place for those voters to go. I still think over the long haul, I know a lot of people suggest that maybe he could hurt Trump more than he hurts Biden. I don't think that's the case. I think when it all shakes out, if you care about the things
that if you're a conservative and you care about the things that, that RFK does, when you find out some of the things he cares about that you don't agree with, you know, one that stands out is reparations. I've had a number of people on the conservative side that don't like Trump that, that have been flirting with RFK, and then they find out about something like reparations, and that immediately puts them back in the Trump camp. You know, I don't think for traditional Democrats, vaccinations are a litmus test issue for them, and some of the other things that he's kind of veered to the more conservative side of the agenda. So this could be a pretty much the coup de grace for Joe Biden in Michigan with him having ballot access.
I know Michigan is the second state, I believe, besides Utah, that has him on the ballot. It's going to be pretty expensive, though, and kind of time-consuming for him to get on the ballot in all 50 states in the District of Columbia without some type of, you know, political, by backing of a major political party.
I'd be stunned if he got on 15 ballots. I think where we are in the process, like you say, what the cost involved is, and I've never thought that he was a threat on the national level. It just matters what states does he get ballot access. We've got, you know, 8 to 10 battleground states that will decide the election, and he only needs to get on the ballot in a couple of those to become a spoiler.
Jason, I think a lot of people might say natural law party. I haven't heard that in a long time. I mean, is it even relevant?
No. I mean, I've been doing this a long time, and I, you know, believe it or not, there's actually people registered in the natural law party. I can't even tell you what it represents. No, it's not relevant.
And just only 60 seconds left here, Jason, but over the weekend we heard the Trump campaign saying that they basically want NIL money from other Republican candidates, that if you're going to use Donald Trump's name, image, and likeness, they'd like a kickback of 5%. How's that flying at the down ballot campaigns?
Well, fortunately, I don't have any clients that have been using his name, image, and likeness, so I haven't had to really contemplate that. You know, listen, he's a business guy. He figured out a business angle. It's something that's going on out there. They're, you know, they're raising good money, but they're not keeping up with Biden. But, you know, part of the problem for the RNC, and I think one of the things that undermines Ronald Romney, is it's very difficult to raise money in digital and direct mail when you are competing against Trump. He vacuums up a lot of the small dollar fundraising around the country. In fact, that's why you've heard of these scam packs where people use it and benefit from it. So I think it's to combat that as well.
All right. Jason Rowe, principal of Rowe Strategic. Thank you so much.
Happy Friday, everybody. We've made it to the end of the work week. The showers have moved out for the most part. I think we're going to see temps in the 50s, sunshine today. Tomorrow, if you're looking to maybe get out and chase a white dimpled ball around, it's going to be 20-mile-an-hour winds. So
that's inclement weather in my book. I'm out.
That's you can practice your putting in your family room.
Yeah.
Right? All in all, not a bad start to our weekend. We hope you've got a big one planned. We've got, look, with the NFL draft coming, we've got Big Sean, we've got Bob Seger, we've got this kind of this concert thing that is going to happen, or at least some Motor City musical icons at least appearing. Don't know yet if they're going to perform, but again, just kind of adds to the excitement.
Yeah, and there's going to be a lot of parties out there to go to.
Yeah.
And I saw Hank Winchester yesterday saying, watch out for fakes. Don't buy tickets. Be very careful.
Because the scammers are out.
Yep. Yeah.
They are out.
So if you had one thing to tell a visitor to Detroit while they're here, whether it might be, hey, make sure you visit Greenfield Village or make sure you go here, what would it be? What would be your insider's tip?
You got to go see the Motown Museum. You're in Motown. You got to go see Motown Museum.
That's a good one.
That's a great one.
I was going to say hit the rooftops. I mean, the Monarch Club is cool. The Book Tower has campers. There's just some really cool rooftops in good weather.
See, I'm a eat your way through Detroit like a Pac-Man machine. I mean, try Vince Pizza at Vince's. Go to the Detroit Distillery. Try their gin. I've got a whole list.
No one mentioned Coney Dogs.
Well, of course you go to American Coney Island.
Yeah, I would go to Lafayette.
Yeah,
Lafayette.
And also the Lycon.
Each other through the window.
You got to hit Greektown for a little Scordelia. I mean, you can eat your way through as well. But I love the Motown suggestion.
You got to go see Motown.
Yeah, because that is right at our heart. Well, either way, it's going to be a big one. Brad Holmes saying anything could happen.
Yeah, he's saying they're in a very good position. And he's just saying they could move up, they could move down. He'll apologize to the fans if they move out of the first round, being this is in Detroit. But he's saying they're going to do what's best for the team, obviously, and they're just excited it's in Detroit.
I'm so excited about the draft being in Detroit. Yeah, I really am. It's just another opportunity for our franchise, our city, just for the world to kind of migrate to downtown Detroit. We have multiple major NFL markets that are within driving distance, so I expect it to be pretty packed. I'm excited for the local businesses. So I think it's going to be really exciting.
He gets it.
Yeah.
He gets it.
And he has become a Detroit guy. We got new unis, the black unis.
The black ones, man.
Pretty cool.
Oh, love them.
Very cool. And Dan Campbell wanted them. He told Rod Wood years ago he wanted them, and he won a division, so he got one.
And then we've got this redo of the helmet, which I think may be the most radical thing they've done in a while, which is it's definitely a more modern kind of edgy look.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll have to it's hard to describe it on the radio,
right.
But it's a little dark, a little more dramatic, but very, very cool. Overnight, the breaking news obviously coming out of the Middle East with Israel retaliating for that massive strike against their territory from Iran. These were limited drone strikes. It was very, very contained. It certainly seems to send the message. And Iran has said, we're done now. We're not going to retaliate. And Israel seems to be saying the same thing. We sent our message. We answered your attack. And now they are in a mode where they are both seem to be saying no need for escalation here. Even the normal rhetoric that you hear coming out of this, not what we're hearing. None of the indignation or the outrage that normally right. comes from Iran state media. So that is passed. And it looks like we could get a bill supporting Israel and maybe even Ukraine this weekend coming out of the U.S.
voted
House.
Saturday, possibly.
And we'll see what kind of drama ensues for Speaker Johnson after that, when it comes. Meantime, the AG getting involved in this outrageous story of $4,500 coffee makers.
Yeah, Michigan Attorney General Dana Nessel launching an investigation into a $20 million grant awarded to Metro Detroit businesswoman Faye Baydoun and revelations of lavish spending, including a $4,500 coffee maker and an $11,000 first-class plane ticket. Now, the probe focuses on expenses incurred by Baydoun's nonprofit, created just days after earmarked funds were allocated. Baydoun, a Democratic donor, has come under scrutiny for her spending, which includes hefty salaries and luxury items. The Michigan Economic Development Corporation, responsible for overseeing such grants, they're under scrutiny for its handling of the case. The investigation marking the second grant linked to former Republican House Speaker Jason Wentworth to face scrutiny as questions arise over the grant sponsorship and allocation. Now, late last year, Nessel began an investigation into a grant Wentworth secured that would provide $25 million for a community health and recreation center in Clare. That grant involved David Coker Jr., a former legislative aide to Wentworth.
All right. Do you think there's going to be any charges coming out of that?
Come on.
Yeah. I think that there may be a slap on the wrist. Or she'll say, we don't have a law that covers this.
That's right.
Right?
Didn't break the law.
And
right.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
If you are an Airbnb provider, we know that up in Lansing, if it moves or breathes, they're going to tax it. And apparently that includes things that don't move, like an Airbnb. But it looks like there's going to be, for the short-term home rentals, they will have some regulation. They will have some taxation that will be done more formally than what's done now. But the interesting part of this, they're going to tell local governments, you can limit these Airbnbs, but you cannot ban them. We'll see what the Michigan Municipal League has to say about
that.
But those lining up in opposition, the Michigan Realtors, Michigan Restaurant Lodging Association, Airbnb itself, and the Michigan Short-Term Rental Association testifying against it. So we'll see where it goes. But that's supplemental income for a lot of families
mm-hmm.
now and, an important part of the gig economy.
Judge Juan Marchand proclaimed about 4:30 yesterday, we have our jury. So there are 12 Manhattanites who are picked and sworn in to be the jury in the Donald Trump hush money trial. 7 men, 5 women took the oath. They still have to get some alternates.
And if there ever was a trial that needed alternates, it's this one.
Well, yeah. They lost 2 yesterday.
That had been chosen, right?
That had already been chosen because one felt that her identity was going to get leaked, because exactly where she worked was leaked. How that happened, we don't know.
Well, it was a media thing. They not only posted what her occupation was, but where her the hospital she worked for. And so she started.
She was concerned it was going to get trickled down to
she heard
she
from
was.
Family and friends. Hey, are you a juror?
Right. So and she's so, out. But they do have 12 people who say they can be impartial, and they need a couple more, and opening statements could begin on Monday.
And to his credit, the judge told the media, knock it off. And in terms of giving out that level of detail on these jurors, and good on him for that. And by the way, he can do that. It's not a First Amendment issue. 7:13 on AM 760, time for WJR Business Beat, brought to you by shelving.com. We rack your world. Here is Jeff Sloan, keeping his finger on the pulse of the startup community here in Metro Detroit. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning, Guy, Lloyd, Jamie. We all know the power of getting kids focused on and interested in something that inspires them when they're young. And entrepreneurship is no exception. We all know the power of making a few coins from selling lemonade at our lemonade stands when we were kids, and it is these simple yet impactful experiences that can drive some of us to go on to pursue grander entrepreneurial endeavors in the future. And so this morning on the Business Beat, we're featuring a new grant program targeted specifically to young entrepreneurs. The program's offered by the payment processing company Merchant Maverick, and it's now open for applications. So if you've got a budding entrepreneur in the family, you should consider this grant program. Any business majority run by a minor child between the ages of 10 to 18 years old that operates in the U.S. is eligible to apply. The business must have been operating for at least 6 months and must be based on U.S. soil. The grant program is known as the Merchant Maverick Opportunity Grant Program. Awards will be made to 5 young entrepreneurs. Now, the company's website says this about the program: kids may not have long credit histories or tons of capital available, but they do have great ideas and the energy, vision, and creativity to make a business work. The 5 winners will receive $2,000 plus free mentorship and business coaching advice from Merchant Maverick's CEO. Applications are open now through May 31st. And again, 5 winners will be selected to receive these $2,000 grants. To learn more and apply on behalf of your young entrepreneur, go to merchantmaverick.com and apply today. I'm Jeff Sloan, founder and CEO of StartupNation.com, the source for everything you need to start and grow your own business. And that's today's Business Beat on the great voice of the Great Lakes, WJR.
That is Taylor Swift releasing her 11th era album, including 31 songs altogether after the surprise announcement, which has Swifties just about losing their minds. We have a Swiftie in here to really get to the core of how exciting.
You got
to
have a Swiftie. We got
this
an expert.
This is Veronica Raitt, producer of Blaine and Lauren on 96.3 WDVD. Good morning.
Good morning.
So how excited are you?
Oh, I have to process it a little bit still. I did not stay up until midnight and 2 a.m., unfortunately, because I have to get up so early, obviously.
Right.
But yeah, it's a lot to process. It's kind of really what I expected out of her with this album. They said it was a pop album, but very like a slow kind of pop album.
Were you shocked that there was 15 additional tracks, that there was a deluxe bonus here?
100%, yeah. She's been hinting, you know, Taylor is always about her Easter eggs. She likes to hint to her fans and make it a little bit of a game for us. And there were a lot of twos leading up to this album. When she announced this album at the Grammys, she held up the number 2.
Yeah.
She had this pop-up in L.A. that had twos everywhere and 2 o'clock on the clocks in the videos that she was releasing days up before the album.
So Easter eggs everywhere.
Easter eggs everywhere. And she's been doing this really since 2006, her very first album. So this is very on brand for her. We didn't really know what the twos meant. A lot of people were hinting at the double albums, but nothing was really for sure. And I woke up this morning and I was like, oh my God, there's another album with 15 more tracks, which I haven't gotten a chance to listen to yet because I woke up in time to just listen to the first album. But so far, I really, really like the album.
What about the features on this album?
Oh, yes. So the lead single that she announced is Fortnite featuring Post Malone, which is really fantastic. I think she also features Florence and the Machine.
That's a great cut.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
That's the most upbeat.
The most upbeat from what I've seen is I Can Do It With a Broken Heart. Seems to be a little bit more upbeat, but the Florida one is also featuring Florence and the Machine is pretty upbeat as well. But it's fantastic as far, and it's for me, I have to listen to an album a few times before I can kind of get a grasp of it.
Right, yeah.
But from first listen, I really, really like it. It's really fantastic. And if you're a lyrics person, this is definitely an album for you because she is a fantastic lyricist.
Well, there's a ton of emotion in it, right?
You can tell. You can hear it.
This is based on what we think is the breakup of her and Joe Alwyn, who she's dated for 6 years. There are some speculations that there are songs about Maddie Healy, who is basically what you would call a rebound after Joe Alwyn. And then there is a speculation that one of the songs, The Alchemy, is about Travis Kelce. But again, she's never going to confirm or deny any of this, but that's the speculation.
I heard But Daddy, I Love Him is an excellent track.
Oh, yes, that's a pretty good one. Again, I've only listened to these songs once.
Right.
But yeah, that one, again, they're all very lyric-based. That's kind of how she is. She's very, I think Taylor Swift is a person that feels a lot, and she puts it into her songs, obviously, because she's like, oh, I don't have enough music. I'm going to put out a double album because I just could not stop writing.
She's prolific. I mean, but on the lyric side, just a little flag for parents, there are explicit lyrics.
There are some explicit lyrics.
This is the second
lyrics,
album
yes.
where she's gotten a little naughty, and there's actually a Taylor F-bomb in there. I kind of went, what?
Yeah, and it's funny because in her Folklore Evermore era, there are some explicit tracks in that too. So yeah, be aware of that if you have kids listening.
Do we expect a tour after this?
It's hard to say because she has obviously the Eras Tour upcoming U.S. leg, the second U.S. leg in Indianapolis. So she's also going to Toronto as well, Miami. So she still has some spots or some upcoming stops in the North America. So it's hard to say if she's going to put these on her tour because, I mean, I went to the tour when it was here in Detroit. It's a 3.5-hour show. How much more can she add to it? So I'm not really sure.
Is the busiest woman in entertainment.
Oh, 100%.
Oh, she works hard, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I don't know how she sleeps because she has said that she has written this album as soon as she turned in Midnights, she had started working on the Tortured Poets Department. So to come up with that many songs in the 2 years span that Midnights has been out is incredible.
And
I don't know how she sleeps.
So if there's a little criticism, is that tolerated in the Swiftie world?
Okay. I mean, it depends on the Swiftie that you go.
It's a little too mellow and a little too downbeat, isn't it?
I was really surprised at how not poppy album or songs that were on this album.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's definitely
not, there's no brightness.
100%. And I had a feeling that was going to be the case going in. And I'm the one that will listen to any Taylor Swift song. So if I wanted to have a poppy song, I can just listen to Midnights. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Right.
So, but yeah, it is definitely not a I don't want to say uplifting, but you know,
upbeat
album for sure.
Well, you know, we all need some time to listen to the Tortured Poets Department and the anthology. And I'm sure you will be listening. Veronica Raitt, producer of Blaine and Lauren. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having
now
me
Now we
on,
don't
guys.
Sound yeah. clueless. Which will be the title of our next album.
That's right.
Right.
And thank you, of course, to her for joining us because we're not Swifties, I would say. I like her. So we needed an expert.
No, absolutely. Yeah. And she's the biggest pop star out there right now. So we gotta be up on it.
Yeah, it was posted 7 hours ago. I'm just trying to look like Fortnite, how many plays it's had so far. And I'll get that for you in a moment there.
So it'll bump Beyonce on the pop chart. Beyonce, is she number one on the pop? I know she's number one on country, but was she number one on pop? Well, if she was, she won't be. Oh, she's not.
Put not it that now. Way. Not when Tay-Tay comes not when, out.
Yeah, they haven't posted how many downloads or how many plays on Spotify it's had yet. So, but I got to believe we're only 7 hours into it. It's got to be in the millions, bajillions.
Yeah. Just really quickly, the Red Wings, you guys, they cleaned up their lockers as they do. Everyone's, you know, they're upset. They're still in their era of being disappointed because they came this close to the playoffs and Dylan Larkin, the captain, was like, I'm not interested in vacation. I'm not interested in everything of this offseason. And I hope the other guys, we have some Dylan Larkin sound. He said, I hope the other guys have that feeling too.
The momentum we built for the guys returning, hopefully there's a hunger there all summer and a little bit of, anger and hurt from what we just went through. Hopefully it's there for them all summer. I know it will be for me.
Kind See? Of a simmering anger there.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there are a lot of questions to be answered. Will Kane come back? Did Brinkett really wants Kane to come back? And so lots of questions. Hopefully the answers come this summer and we can get some playoff teams in LCA.
Yeah, I got a feeling the dam bursts next year, don't you?
Yeah, they were so close this year. Yeah. So close.
We've been talking Taylor Swift, which is the big news in the morning. But locally, some big news about one of the best entertainment venues we've got.
Absolutely. Music Hall's ambitious $125 million expansion project cleared a major hurdle as Detroit City Council Committee endorsed $80 million in nonprofit bonds for the endeavor. The bonds secured by Music Hall revenues mark a novel financial approach in Detroit. The expansion, designed by architect Todd Williams, promises a 2,000-capacity concert venue, a music academy, and more. Private financing already secured. Construction slated to begin this summer, aiming for completion by December of 2026. Project leaders assure minimal disruption in the area during construction.
Meantime, we've got a big-time charity event going on up in East Lansing with one of the biggest guys in East Lansing, Tom Izzo. We'll talk about that on the other side of the break and connect with Magnum T.I. in the off-season here.
Yes.
He launches a really, really nice fundraiser called the Izzo Legacy Family Fund. That's what it benefits, and we'll give you details on that. Yeah, be a nice day
I'm
for
sure
a run
really
walk.
Relaxed.
And his voice is probably not hoarse.
Yeah,
but we'll see. He could have been up singing with Taylor Swift
he
all night.
Been.
Who knows?
He could have been.
Tom
Izzo, Swiftie.
When we come back on JR Morning. I guess I'm eager to start the weekend, helping you to plan that weekend. We've got a great event up in East Lansing we want to let you know about, and it is led by one of our favorite guys. Let's welcome in the Michigan State University men's head basketball coach, Tom Izzo, as he prepares for the fifth annual Izzo Legacy Run, Walk, Roll. That's a mouthful, coach. We're also joined by Steve Courtney. Tom, good morning.
That was a mouthful. I didn't think you were going to get all that out. Well,
you've covered everything. I guess motorized vehicles not welcome, but you can run, you can walk, or you can roll, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, we're going to put one more on that for next year when we get Courtney out to do it. The last one will be push. just on a bed with wheels, and I'm going to push it.
A gurney.
You know what, Tom? I was going to say
roll and push.
I was going to say how ironic this conversation is because, as fate would have it, I just got done with my usual 6-mile run. So, you know, you're not buying that?
How was the dream?
great cause there, Tom. Tell us all about it.
You know, guys, my wife and daughter started it. I just thought that we should be doing more in this community, and I don't know, I think we support 12 or 13 charities, and you know, you support some in money, but by being involved in this, it also brings awareness, and you know, maybe in Ellie's place, somebody wants to give to that. You have a chance to give where you want to give, and it's been really cool. It's grown from 2,000, it's up over 5,000 runners now, and we've got, I forgot how many, 4 countries, but I think we got 39 states, and people have flown in, you know, just enjoy the weekend. We put it around spring ball so that they could see the game too. And I don't know, it's going to be kind of cool, I guess. But as a lot of things I do, I get credit for things that other people do the work on. Now, I am doing a little bit here today. It'll be a busy day tomorrow morning, but for the most part, I give my wife, my daughter, all the volunteers a lot of credit. As Jamie knows, behind every good man, there's probably a better woman, right, Jamie?
That's my motto in life. Yeah. Are you going to run all the way to the football stadium and watch the spring game after?
Well, yeah, what we do is it's kind of cool because we'll start the race off, and the run is one time, and the walk, and then the roll starts it off. Or wheelchairs and everything, and it's pretty cool. And we have our players out there, and the president's running in it, and Jonathan will be there. And then the tradition went, even when D'Antonio was here, that at the end, they finish right in Spartan Stadium and can walk around the stadium. They'll be, you know, they'll be up on the big board. And then I take some pictures with some guys and ladies, and it's just kind of a way to meet a new 5,000 people. And I got to admit, it's grown bigger and better than I ever thought it would. But it's when I see some of the different charities that are there, just makes you realize, as you guys do a lot there at WJR, and how many people need us. And at the end of the day, what you do for others is probably what your legacy is really about, not how many games you win or things you do, but the players you change and people in this case you change.
You know, Coach, the race offers various distances and activities. You got the signature 5K run walk. You got the 5K roll and the kid sprint. So you got so many diverse options that really contribute to the inclusivity and the accessibility of the event.
You know, that's a very good thing to say. And, you know, it's going to be a little embarrassing, too, that I heard Steve did sign up, but he went to the kids one. And that big body is going to look foolish with a bunch of seven-year-olds over on the track. But, hey, we'll take his money whatever way we can get it. But you're so right. We have the kids one is maybe special. We got medals for everybody, and you should see the medals for the kids. It's really cool. I mean, I give my family credit. They did a lot of work over these years, and it's going to be a special day. I'm looking forward to it.
It's the 50-yard walk that's got my attention. And
is there a fridge at the end?
Right.
Chances are better than that. God, you know me all too well. Coach, let's talk about what Jonathan Smith has going on. First year football Spartan head coach, leading the team into the Spartan Stadium for the spring showcase. Starts at 2 o'clock. I'm very excited about his presence. The accounts coming out of the previous 14 spring practices has been very optimistic.
Well, I think it has. I've been over for a few of them in between all this work we got to do now at this time of year. But, you know, for the most part, I mean, I've looked at the quarterback, who a lot of people have talked about, and seems to be every bit as big as the billing. You know, it's a little hard with those down linemen to see everything, but I do like Jonathan. I do like what he's doing. I think he's got a really good staff. The new facility helps some. There's a lot of optimism, upbeat, and, you know, the president was over there the other day. I really like Kevin. I think, be honest with you guys, I think we got a lot of things heading in the right direction. And Jonathan and I now got to catch our women's gymnastic team and our hockey team.
Wow.
So that gives us a little incentive to continually move forward.
Well, Coach, you said you're really busy this year. Are you hitting the portal?
Well, you know, you got to be aware of the portal. I'm not doing like some of these teams. There's teams in our league getting 7-8 guys, which means they're really dissing some people they had. It's the craziest time. Yesterday was a crazy day with a couple kids from Wisconsin leaving, and I'm amazed what's happened. But for the most part, I just left my guys in the weight room, and I like the direction we're going. I think Jaden Akins is going to have a big year. He looks as good as I've seen him. And, you know, we forget we had the kid, Jeremy Beers, who, you know, was really playing well until he got injured there. So I like the direction we're headed. I don't know if anybody knows who's going to be on anybody's team right now. But I bet you one thing that's good about the portal, three of you would like to put the fourth member of your team in the portal at JR, and that's Steve. So, you know.
This is the roast of Steve Courtney.
If there was a vote, I'm sure it would probably go that way, Coach. But I think it's going to be, quite frankly, the summer of Izzo, because you realize you don't have to face Zach Edey next year.
Boy, I tell you, that kid is... you know, I think somebody said it best. I think it was Danny Hurley from UConn. You know, that is a generational player. You know, they don't come around every year. And what you got to do to combat him and how it affects other guys, you just can't imagine. But just think of a guy for all of you walking around 7'4". I mean, that's a foot or more, 2 feet more than some of you probably. And then 310, 20, who knows?
I don't know
what the scale really tells you. But a big fella. And I love Zach, and I love Matt and the program. but I'm sure as hell glad he's gone.
I know you are.
So what are you guys doing?
I thought it was the end of the segment. Well, you know, I got questions if you want them.
I guess it is, but we're going to – Tom, we'll bid you goodbye. Have a wonderful walk, run, roll. And the new
and push.
And push. The new push feature. Have a great time at that spring football game. That'll be a lot of fun.
Well, guys, you know, it's kind of the end of the season, but I told you, anytime you want me on when you got nothing to do and there's no great sports out, I'm always a phone call away. I appreciate, you know, the whole year, what you do for all of us up here in East Lansing. And don't forget about us. Steve, if you start now, by next year, I think you'll handle the push very well.
I'm going to work on it, Tom. You got my word on that. Appreciate you, my friend. Thank you so much for everything.
Thanks, Steve.
Magnum TI, just a reminder that this conversation with the man himself, brought to you by the hardworking men and women at Bill Brown Ford. You know, my good friend Matt Garko and his team are stacking wins each and every day. Drive with the champions at Bill Brown Ford. Shop their TrueView inventory at BillBrownFord.com today. You fine folks have a great weekend.
You too.
You as well.
Automotive Views now with Jamie Butters, brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. Learn more at MichiganBusiness.org.
Auto sales reporting used to be a pretty straightforward process. Brands would tally up the sales booked by their U.S. dealers each month and publish them so everyone could see how the industry was doing and which companies are winning or losing. But then Tesla rocked the boat. It reported only quarterly instead of monthly, and it included all of its global sales, not just those in the U.S. Soon, all of the norms were blown up. GM and Stellantis now report U.S. sales only on a quarterly basis. Jaguar Land Rover reports North America results, but not U.S. sales. The latest irritating innovation comes from Mercedes-Benz USA, which has taken to reporting its wholesales, the factory output that gets sold to dealers, not retail sales to actual customers. The company explains that its purpose is to better align with financial filings, but what shareholders don't get to see is whether consumers are buying the vehicles. And in the end, that's what really counts. With this week's Automotive View, I'm Jamie Butters, host of the Daily Drive podcast and executive editor of Automotive News.
Well, besides people, a lot of people coming to the city next week for the NFL draft. They'll be coming to watch the draft, but they'll need to eat too. And it's one of Detroit's most unique culinary experiences. Some would say if you haven't tasted a Boogaloo sandwich, well, you haven't lived. The whole country will get the opportunity to taste this legendary sandwich during the NFL draft. And WJR senior news analyst Marie Osborne takes a bite. Marie, you got me hungry already.
Oh, this is so delicious. Chef Greg Beard is the owner of Chef Greg's Soul in the Wall restaurant, which has been selected to be an official food vendor at the draft. So what is a boogaloo?
8-inch toasted bun, seasoned ground beef, caramelized onions, melted cheese, and a boogaloo. And we made three more sandwiches, which is a boogaloo steak, ribeye, boogaloo chicken, cut up fresh breast chicken meat, and we do a vegetarian sandwich, broccoli, zucchini, squash, peppers, and onion sauteed with the boogaloo sauce.
So interested in what's in that sauce?
Boogaloo sauce has 14 herbs, seasoning, and spices in the sauce, and we create it.
So what, that's all you'll get from Chef Greg about that secret sauce, by the way. That's it. The Boogaloo has its roots in Detroit's West Side, where more than 50 years ago, Gene Johnson opened Brothers Barbecue, and it quickly gained a cult following.
Who better to represent Detroit than the Boogaloo sandwich that is a Detroit sandwich that Mumford High School students from the 70s to the 80s to the 90s, that's all they had. That's all they ate all the time. And people from Cass Tech, from Osborne, from Henry Ford, all from around Detroit came to get this sandwich.
Now, Chef Greg says he has fans around the country.
I got people come here and say, I'm going back to Minnesota. Make me four or five sandwiches so I can take with me on the road. If they're coming from Florida, I got the same thing. People coming from Florida, I got the same people coming from Georgia, people coming from California, Phoenix, you name it, Texas.
And Chef Greg says his culinary credo is?
When you keep something simple and good, people want it.
Now, if you're going to be heading to the draft, you want to know where you can get that Boogaloo sandwich, all you need to do is go to Hart Plaza. Chef Greg will be there, all set up, ready, and waiting. And guys, I do have to tell you, I have a quick sidebar story about this particular sandwich. When I was in college at the University of Detroit, this was back when dinosaurs roamed the earth, my husband and I were dating. And we would go to Brothers Barbecue. We would save our pennies and go over there for dinner. And we remember Jean Johnson, and she also had a great coconut pie that she would serve. Oh. So this has a long history in the city of Detroit, and it's just great that he's getting the kind of recognition that he deserves.
Has he bottled the Boogaloo sauce?
Yes, you can get it. Yes, look online, search online. You can get it right from their restaurant. And I'm telling you, dab a little behind your ears, and you're all set to go for the rest of the day.
Oh, man.
Just don't do it around Mike Tyson.
It is so, so, and it's nothing like anything you've ever tasted before. It's not like barbecue sauce, really. And some say it's because, you know, it was called Jean's Sauce of the Islands. And so she has like a little, or it had a little Jamaican theme going on in there. It has a little kick. It's really good, you guys.
Yeah, my dad used to go to Brothers all the time. And sometimes he would bring home some Brothers Barbecue on the West Side.
Have you had the sandwich?
I haven't had the sandwich. I got to ask my brothers if they've had it, because they went to Mumford. They graduated in 71 and 74, so they would know. And so they probably did have the Boogaloo
sandwich.
Hanging
out there, right?
Yeah.
You know, there was a company that did a Made in Detroit basket, where you would get all the great things that are made here. So you got your Better Made chips.
The Faygo.
You could get some of those dips from our friends.
Sanders.
Yeah. I mean, you could, and the Boogaloo sauce ought to be in there.
Sure. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But, and now this is another way to be able to sample this would be at the NFL draft with all these visitors. And I also should tell you, when I first called Chef Greg to do this interview, you know, I call people and just say, can you talk to me? And he says to me, honey, I can't talk to you right now. I am putting cobbler in the oven right now. And if I don't get this cobbler and mac and cheese in there, people are going to be mad at me. Call me back. And he almost hung up on me, so I had to call him back. But he was a wonderful interview.
The man
very
is busy.
Gracious.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was really cute that I'm media, you can wait. I've got cobbler to deal with and mac and cheese for my customers.
Nobody likes cobbler interruptus.
That's right.
No.
All right. Marie Osborne, WJR senior news analyst. Great story. Thanks for bringing it to us.
Thank you.
And some other things that folks are going to be able to sample here at the NFL Draft. We've got this NFL Draft stage where we're going to see Big Sean. We're going to see the Detroit Youth Choir. There are several days of events that are going to be taking place there, including Bob Seger. Now, we don't know if Bob's actually going to be performing. We know he's a huge football fan.
Huge. I would run into him in the Lions locker room all the time.
Yeah. So whether he's going to be there to kind of charge up the crowd, it would still be special having a Rock and Roll Hall of Famer. I got a feeling that Barry Sanders might make an appearance out there.
Sure.
That would certainly be huge. But there's going to be some interesting things happening. Now, if they could throw together a quick little combo so that Bob could kind of, you know, do a little Hollywood Nights or a little old-time rock and roll.
A little Eminem, Bob Seger mashup.
Ooh.
Oh.
See, this is why he's the best producer in town, right there.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to it. And I think when people converge onto the city of Detroit, once they leave here, they're going to have a different outlook on this city.
100%.
Well, and, you know, look at all the coming together of the culinary arts here, the musical arts, just the folks that know how to do great staging, and it's just going to leverage all of the other amenities we have.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of sweet strategizing that has gone into this.
Coming up, it's the latest news stories of the day. And also, we'll be talking about the Lions' new uniforms. That's with the Detroit Lions Chief Communications and Brand Officer at 8:35. But the top news stories of the day coming up next on JR Morning.
As drab as it is out there right now, it's going to get a lot better. We should see some sunshine. It's not going to be really warm, but, you know, it's Friday, right? So we've got our inner sunshine going on.
Correct. Although you can't even see the downtown building. It's really foggy.
Yeah, when the Rinsen is shrouded like that, you know, it's kind of a wet and damp day. Overnight, obviously, the big news, Israel striking back at Iran. It was a very limited strike. No nuclear facilities hit. No refineries hit. So it appears that our oil prices are going to be stabilizing. And this was in the Isfahan province, which is known as a tourist destination within Iran, but it's also known for missile manufacturing, and that's why it was targeted in this case. But both sides, just in terms of their rhetoric after the event, Iran saying it's done, Israel trying to turn down the heat as well. At the G7 summit in Capri, Italy, the G7 ministers are saying you need to de-escalate, but then signaling that they're not done with Iran just yet. Secretary of State Antony Blinken.
We're committed to Israel's security. We're also committed to de-escalating, to trying to bring this tension to a close. The G7 condemned the unprecedented Iranian attack on Israel, unprecedented in scope and scale. Scope because it was a direct attack on Israel from Iran, scale because it involved more than 300 munitions, including ballistic missiles.
And he is saying, look for the G7 to put more sanctions on Iran, and we'll await that. Meantime, they have a jury in the hush money trial, but if there ever was a court proceeding that needed alternates, it's this one.
Yes, so they have the 12 as of yesterday afternoon, the final 12, as they say, Manhattanites, as eclectic as the city itself. They are Black, Asian, white, male, female, middle-aged, and young, including one woman in her first job out of college. So this is quite an experience for her. They still need to get alternates. It's looking like opening arguments could be on Monday, but we'll have to wait and see how today goes. But yeah, so 12 men. Of the jury, it's 12 total people. And
also have an upcoming hearing on whether or not former President Trump violated the
gag
order.
And
there is a new development there. He's really towing the line and talking about the jury.
Yeah, so he has this gag order, so he's not supposed to say too much, but he's retweeting stuff that Jesse Water has said about the jury. And that is why the one woman, the oncology nurse, felt like her identity was about to come out, and which is why she was dismissed. So that will certainly come up when they look at this gag order moving forward.
And the judge has admonished everybody involved, but most notably the media. You can talk only in the most general terms about these jurors. And the reason that she got freaked out was that they said where she worked, the hospital where she actually worked, which there's only so many oncology nurses there.
And she's an oncology nurse. Now the field of who this person could be gets much smaller. And
process
she got
of elimination.
Nervous. Yeah. So I get that.
You and Marie have been doing a great job for a number of years now covering what's going on at the Wayne County Juvenile Facility. More concerning news there.
Yeah, investigations into Wayne County's juvenile detention facility reveal over 80% of issues cited in state reports are staffing related. Reports detail 60 violations in the past year, with staff errors accounting for 50, including instances of improper restraint and failure to provide timely medical care. Now, despite ongoing efforts, repeat violations persist, raising concerns over child safety, with chronic understaffing exacerbating conditions. Incidents of assault and neglect have been reported. The facility, once under state supervision, now operates on a provisional license due to continued violations. Lawsuits alleging a hostile work environment further underscore systemic challenges. Wayne County Executive Warren Evans has declared a public health emergency at the facility, acknowledging the urgent need to reform. So listen, check out the full story. It's in the Detroit News. Kara Berg did the story. She was also, guys, one of four journalists honored this week by the Michigan Press Association Foundation as the winner of the 2024 Wade H. McCree Advancement of Justice Awards.
Well, congratulations to her.
Yeah.
Great work.
She had a series last year, Michigan Kids Keep Dying, on Child Protective Services Watch. It was an investigation into that, and that's what she won that award for. So
and got results and reforms from it.
Yes,
she did. More importantly, what good journalists do. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is on the ballot here in the state of Michigan. The Natural Law Party had a little confab, and they selected him as their candidate. So he is going to officially appear. We are in the only second state where he has made the ballot.
His family, they don't really care, do they?
Well, let's hear from Carrie Kennedy, his sister, as she, along with 14 others, endorsed President Joe Biden yesterday.
I'm joined here today with my sisters, Kathleen and Rory, with Joe and Chris and Max. And with my hero, President Joe Biden.
If she sounds like RFK Jr., it's because she suffers from the same vocal dysphonia syndrome that he suffers from. Apparently, it does travel in families, but Carrie Kennedy endorsing, along with, I said, more than a dozen other members of her family, and kind of rebuking rejecting her brother's candidacy. Now, we asked Jason Rowe, the former executive director of the GOP. He's on two ballots. What's the upside here for RFK getting on more?
I'd be stunned if he got on 15 ballots. I think where we are in the process, like you say, what the cost involves is, and I've never thought that he was a threat on the national level. It just matters what states does he get ballot access. We've got, you know, 8 to 10 battleground states that will decide the election, and he only needs to get on the ballot in a couple of those to become a spoiler.
So he can still complicate
life. He doesn't need to be on 50 to be the spoiler.
Yeah. Just in the right ones, right? Just the right places.
And while RFK himself thinks he's taking more from Donald Trump now than he is Joe Biden, Jason says no, he poses a much larger threat to Joe Biden than Donald Trump. Sad day always when the guys clean out their lockers at the end of a season, and yesterday was no different for the Red Wings.
Yes, I mean, they spoke to the media. You can hear it in Dylan Larkin's voice. He is so upset. They were this close to the playoffs, and they made such a push at the end there. And he said to the media yesterday, I don't care about a summer vacation. I care about next year.
The momentum we built for the guys returning, hopefully there's a hunger there all summer and a little bit of anger and hurt from what we just went through. Hopefully it's there for them all summer. I know it will be for me.
I believe that carries over. Yeah. They will remember this feeling moving forward.
And that's good. That's motivating.
Yeah.
It is.
Right? We saw the same thing with the Lions.
With the Lions, yeah.
Yeah. Yesterday, the Tigers dropped another one, but it wasn't the bats were there, but they keep booting balls in the field. So hopefully their hands will get a little softer by the time the Twins come to town, and hopefully that things will dry out here, and I'm sure that game will get in. Great news for the Music Hall, which is such an important venue, Lloyd.
It is. Music Hall's ambitious $125 million expansion project cleared a major hurdle as a Detroit City Council committee endorsed $80 million in nonprofit bonds for the build-out. The bonds secured by Music Hall revenues mark a novel financing approach in Detroit. The expansion, designed by architect Todd Williams, promises 2,000 capacity concert venue, a music academy, and a whole lot more. The private financing already secured. Construction slated to begin this summer, aiming for completion, guys, in December of 2026.
Bring it on. Just another in a spate of big announcements this week. When we come back, yes, they have 12 jurors. They're going to get the alternates. We could see opening arguments as soon as Monday. What does that mean in the hush money trial? And also how both sides are framing this as election interference. How could that be actual agreement? We'll talk to Tom Leonard, former Speaker of the Michigan House, next on JR Morning at 8:19. We're just a little over an hour away from the hush money trial of former President Donald Trump resuming in New York. A dozen Manhattanites already selected to serve on that jury. They need to get to the alternates today, but there is a high likelihood that we could see opening arguments in this case beginning Monday, and that's what the judge has instructed both sides. Be prepared for opening arguments on Monday. Tom Leonard is a partner with Plunkett Cooney. He's also the former Speaker of the Michigan House of Representatives and a former Attorney General candidate. Tom Leonard, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. As you just are in the cheap seats with the rest of us, everything, there's a lot unusual about this case. But has the voir dire process been above board, and do you think that a fair jury has been impaneled?
So, you know, without actually being there working on this, it's hard to say for certain. I mean, seemingly it says yes, but you know what? The American people are now getting an inside look at how tedious and how long this process is. I mean, and you nailed it. It has to be a fair and impartial jury. And this one is especially hard. I mean, you're in New York City, a very, very dark blue area, dealing with the most high-profile defendant this country has ever seen. I mean, who has not formulated an opinion about Donald Trump? So to get 12 panel jurors plus 6 alternates who say that they can be fair and impartial is very tough. And that's why this thing has taken a week so far.
But, Tom, you know, to have 12 jurors seated this quickly, was that expected?
I bet this is about the timeline that they were expecting it. This is a long process. And think about this. I mean, they've been sitting there for a week, 8 hours a day, questioning these jurors one at a time. And, you know, I know day one, I believe they had 180 jurors that were, you know, selected, not panel, but selected. And I believe half of them were gone the first day, just simply going through their questionnaires because they admitted they couldn't be fair and impartial. So, you know, I think this is about the timeline that they were looking for. And, you know, according to them, it will start on Monday.
But Tom, because the judge said, raise your hand if you think you can't be impartial, that shortened the timeline here. Otherwise, it would have been every individual being questioned.
Oh, absolutely. And even when they say they are going to be fair and impartial, you still have to go through a lot of questions to make certain that that juror is telling the truth, or maybe implicitly, you know, they may not have some type of bias that they're that you may not know of. So, you know, the types of questions that they're looking at here are, what is your news source? I mean, for instance, if a juror says, I only watch CNN and MSNBC, then the Trump defense team is probably going to try to get that juror kicked. If you've got one that says, I only watch Newsmax or Fox News, then the prosecution's probably going to try to get that juror kicked. So it is a very tedious process.
Interesting, Tom, that, of course, going in and out of court, Donald Trump has been very vociferous in his criticism that this is election interference. It takes him off the campaign trail, that it's motivated by Joe Biden. Interestingly now, there seems to be a growing narrative on the other side from Alvin Bragg and his team saying, you're darn right it's about election interference. You tried to hide pertinent information about an affair you had with a porn star. And so they
prior to the election,
and that's a form of election interference as well. Can both be true? And does Bragg's argument hold water?
You know, I've had some of the four indictments, or I guess the four cases, if you will, that Donald Trump has been facing. This is the one that I've probably been the most critical of, because, you know, Donald Trump has essentially been charged with 38 what were misdemeanors, mm-hmm. and they enhanced them to a felony because they brought, you know, a campaign finance violation. And I believe, I hate to impugn motives, but I believe this were any other person in New York, I don't believe that this prosecutor would be going after him for felonies. But, you know, that said, here's where we are.
But does he make a point when he says, look, you tried to hide something very pertinent to voters ahead of the 2016 election, so spare me your interference argument?
You know, those are allegations right now. We will see if Alvin Bragg's, you know, arguments hold up if Donald Trump is convicted here in the next few weeks. Right now, I would say those are just allegations.
So, Tom, the former president posted something on Truth Social that he attributed to Fox News host Jesse Waters, saying that they are catching undercover liberal activists lying to the judge in order to get on the Trump jury. Is that violation of the gag order?
So likely not. And there's going to be a show cause hearing on Tuesday to decide that. The judge is going to go through this. He's going to have an open hearing, talk to you know, President Trump, his defense counsel, the prosecutors. You know, again, Donald Trump has been very good at tiptoeing to the you know, right up to the line without crossing it. It's very hard to gag a criminal defendant. Now, would I have sent out that tweet? Absolutely not. If I was defense counsel, would I have advised him not to, or would I be happy that he did? No, but likely not a violation of the gag order.
It's sort of against the spirit, though. You're not supposed to identify these jurors or any way or intimidate them in any way. And it seems like it goes against the spirit at the very least.
And my guess is if that argument is raised in court on Tuesday, the Trump defense team is going to say, Judge, all he was doing was retweeting or requoting something that was out there. Again, was it appropriate? No. Would I have done it? No. But it seems like he tiptoed right up to the line without crossing it. But we'll know more on Tuesday.
Isn't something going on today, too, a Sandoval hearing to let the defendants know if they want to go to the stand?
I don't know. I have not seen that. But that's something that would have to be done before the actual, you know, trial starts and before they have opening arguments. So that I don't know. But it would seem that that would be the case if they're going to start arguments on Monday or opening arguments on Monday.
Former President Trump has said that he is prepared to testify in his own defense in this case. He has said that this liaison never happened. There are others that will testify to the contrary. But if you were defense counsel in this case, is there any way you would put him on the stand? And wouldn't you just assume that Alvin Bragg has a perjury trap set for him?
So without knowing everything they have in front of them, it's very difficult to answer that question. But as a general rule of thumb, the defense attorney does not want to put their client on trial, especially if you have one like, you know, Donald Trump, who can lose his cool, under pressure, under questioning. I would say it's going to be very unlikely that he takes the stand in this case. I would put everything on Alvin Bragg, and I would make him prove this case beyond a reasonable doubt.
It's funny. These are mundane things that happen in court all the time, but this is not the ordinary because of who the defendant is. So we will certainly be watching.
Absolutely. Yes. And it's not ordinary. Like I said, this is the most high profile defendant we've ever seen, which makes this case that much more difficult.
It sure does. Tom Leonard, we appreciate your insights and always our friends at Plunkett and Cooney.
Hey, thank you, my friends. Appreciate you. Look forward to coming back.
All right. Good enough. And we will see what the rest of the day brings. Tall order to get six more jurors. And hopefully you wouldn't have any of the 12 fall off the wagon like
That's
we
right.
did yesterday.
Maybe they should get extra, extra ones.
That's the alternates to the alternates.
Right.
Yeah, you need a deep bench in these court cases. When we come back, the Lions making a big splash yesterday, a wonderful event to kind of rave up and rev up their season ticket holders and unveiling some new uniforms, including a new helmet design. Is it on your shopping list? We'll get to that next.
Last night, the Detroit Lions made a pretty bold statement on and off the field as they revealed their highly anticipated new uniforms at Ford Field. The event, exclusively for Lions loyal members, showcased the fusion of the team's modern essence and the rich heritage of its storied franchise. And following the triumphs of last year, the Lions Chief Communications and Brand Officer, Brian Fattini, joins us now on the JR Morning Show. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me.
So give us an overview of the new uniforms. Talk about the inspiration behind these uniforms and what they symbolize for the team.
Yeah, for us, it really, really is embracing a new era while honoring the past, to be honest. We really wanted to go back to a more traditional look on our home uniform, the blue. So we cleaned some things up there with the block numbers and brought silver and white in a little more prominently. And then on the white, a road jersey, kind of the same thing. Push the envelope a little with Detroit across the chest, something that our players are really excited to wear on the road. And then our alternate uniform is black, and we knew it would be a little polarizing when we brought it back for a lot of reasons, but it's something that we felt brought a new energy, really, really showed the grit and the attitude of this team. Our coach, Rod Wood, our president, told a great story last night about Coach Campbell asking for it. Our players were really adamant about having one. So we feel like at the end of the day, we've got something for everybody, which is what our goal was.
Yeah, that was going to be my question. Dan Campbell wanted these black uniforms, and he asked about them all the way back in 2021.
He did. He did. Rod, he talked to Rod about bringing them back, and Rod told him at the time that if he wanted a division, we'd bring them back. And so it worked out really well for the storytelling, but we had a lot of faith in where the team was going. And so we pulled the trigger on them about 18 months ago. We made that decision and the team helped us out and brought it all full circle.
You guys found out what every White House has known since the beginning of time. Things have a way of leaking out sometimes. Was that a strategic leak? Just kind of get people fired up, or was that a little oopsie? And to that end, how are they selling?
So I will tell you, it was not a strategic leak. That happened. I will say, our marketing and social team is not just best in class in the NFL. I truly believe they're world class, and they prepared for it. They embraced the fact that it could happen. And so we were ready. And I think that was, these things happen. And once they do as a business, it happens across industry. And you can either, you know, get upset about it, or you can leap to it and make it a positive. And I think our team did an amazing job.
I don't think it stole your thunder at all. And you know, but these jerseys are now up online. Are you seeing some traffic?
So last night's event was amazing. Tons of energy. I think when I left the building last night, I think we had one black jersey left in the building.
Oh, man.
Oh, wow.
I believe it was a 3X, if anybody out there is looking for one. But it was one black jersey left. So that tells us a lot about the fans that were in attendance and their reaction, which is great.
Are there still the tributes on the jerseys to William Clay Ford? You know, the WCF, is that still on there and on the helmets as well?
It is, and we made a decision to bring it to life in a different way, but still honor Mr. Ford. So it's going to be a permanent sticker on the back left of the helmet that'll be on there on both helmets for every game. And then we did something really interesting. We were with Nike, who's amazing at this. We created a label that will live only in the game-worn jerseys, and it's inspired a little bit by Mr. Ford's style. He was always very well-dressed, very classy. So it mimics a custom suit label. It's got the traditional WCF logo and then his penned signature underneath it, and that'll live inside our game-worn jerseys.
According to Justin Rogers' article, the Lions will have five pairs of pants, white, blue, black, silver, and silver with stripes, increasing flexibility. This is great. They could just go in the closet and choose different combos.
They can, within reason. There's some NFL rules we've got to make sure we stay within, but it is. It was one of our goals. I think we don't want to go as far as some of the college programs, but we want to have a little flexibility and have a little fun with the way we can wear them.
You know, while I was a marketing guy in college, far be it for me to tell you your job, Ryan, but you know, I there may be a branding opportunity that you're missing. Something like this.
Forward down the field.
Lloyd Jackson has a great set of pipes, Brian.
Lloyd, let's go. We got a mic for you.
Well, listen, I am available if there's ever a need. If someone gets ill, I'm there.
We love it.
For those out there that might be saying, oh, this is much ado about some subtle changes in the unis, from a marketing standpoint, explain why you got to keep it fresh.
Well, I think for us, our team continues to evolve, and I think the look evolving with it, the city evolves, and so making sure the look continues to evolve with it without getting away from who we really are. And that's why it's important to us. I think, you know, uniforms across sports have become such an energy point. People obsess about them. There are literally hundreds of websites who focus on them. It's just one of those things that people get so passionate about. So when you're doing this from, you know, the last 2 years, there's a little trepidation, but there's also a ton of excitement to roll out something that everybody will like.
And I just got to feel that, you know, with the black jersey and the helmet, the blue with the black lion, that's, you know, we were talking about it earlier, like having blackout nights where everybody wears black and at the stadium, and when they wear their black jerseys, I think it would be a lot of fun.
It does. It opens up a ton of opportunity. And last night there was a woman behind me in the stands. As soon as the lights went out to reveal the black jersey, she was going nuts. Just so excited for it. And that's really what makes it, you know, that shows you all the possibilities that people are that excited about an alternate. It's really, really fun.
But I think everybody's also excited about the team this year as well.
Yeah, no, obviously a great run last year. Really happy. You know, we were a half away from where we really wanted to be, but the team, you know, great energy rolling into this year. The guys are back at Allen Park this week, getting work in, which just brings another level of energy into the building. So it's been fun, and we're looking forward to getting on the field.
Well, it also, like, it's new, but it also harkens back to some older days of the Lions, which is cool, too.
Yeah, that was really, that was important to us. I think if you look at the last jersey we wore, they were a little, our silver kind of muted to a little gray over time.
Right.
We wanted to get back to silver. We really pinned up the early 90s uniform as a muse. And then we also, the first thing we put on the wall was the work that Ford did with the Bronco, because I think they did a masterful job of taking something classic and iconic and really giving it a new modern look. And that's really what we wanted to do here.
Now that's interesting. What did you, I mean, with the Bronco, there's certainly the off-road kind of edgier thing, but then there's also kind of that classic two-tone that they got going on. What inspiration did you pull from the vehicle?
It was really their ability to take that look. Like, you see a Bronco, whether it's a late 60s or the newer ones, they look connected. They look like they are in the same family. And we looked at our uniforms in the 90s and said, hey, can we do something like that where this really gives you that traditional vibe, looks like it's meant to be in the family, but also we need all those modern elements that Nike design and production brings. So that was really, when we looked at that Bronco, it was like, we thought Ford just did a marvelous job of that. And we know how advanced the new ones are. And so we really just, that was our muse sort of on the wall for the last 2 years.
Well, we remember the Bears in the Super Bowl shuffle back in 85. Having seen Kirby Joseph on the runway yesterday, you better trademark that dance because I think you can make use of it.
Kirby is, Kirby's got energy to spare. And he really, really brought it for us yesterday. It was great. And he's not going to run out of dances, I promise.
Brian Fattini is the Detroit Lions Chief Communications and Brand Officer. Pleasure having you. Those uniforms are great, and I'm sure they're going to excite the fans as well. Thank you for being here.
Thanks, sir.
And coming up, you could win tickets to experience the magic of Annie playing Detroit's Fox Theater for 5 performances, May 3rd through the 5th. Listen in. We'll be giving away those tickets momentarily. And coming up next, Mark Hollis, the Chief Operating Officer of Rock Ventures and host of JR Sunday from 8 to 10. He has a special show planned for Sunday. We'll talk to him about it coming up next at 8:49 on JR Morning.
Actually, you don't even have to wait that long. The sun will come out later on this afternoon, but we can make it shine for you right now if you're caller number 9 at 1-800-859-0WJR, 1-800-859-0957. We got a pair of tickets just itching to go into your pocket to the opening night performance of Annie, playing at the Fox May 3rd through the 5th. And in case you're not caller number 9, you can still find those tickets available for purchase at 313presents.com and Ticketmaster. It is one of those great shows that just lifts your spirit.
Yeah, iconic. You know what, Guy? Bringing the NFL draft to Detroit was a long time coming, and a guy who had a big role in that is our friend Mark Hollis, who's a chief operating officer for Rock Ventures and host of a show here on JR, a Sunday from 8 to 10 a.m., and this Sunday is going to be an extra special show. He's going to bring in the who's who to talk about the draft. Let's bring in Mark right now. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning. What are we, 6 days away now? It's I don't even remember what day.
Where's your countdown clock? Well, Detroit is on the clock, and you're going to have, honestly, everyone who's anyone on your show on Sunday. Talk about it.
Yeah, it's a fun show to do in the first place because it's kind of a get-together with all of my old friends. But we're looking forward. Scheduled to be on. Of course, the broadcast is so important with more than 50 million viewers tuning into the city of Detroit. Kirk Herbstreit's going to join us from ABC and ESPN. Charles Davis from the NFL Network. We also have Rod Wood, the president of the Detroit Lions. Mayor Duggan, well, he's going to describe the whole layout of how this happened, how we got here, and then Commissioner Goodell and Dan Gilbert are going to wrap it up, and it should be a fun conversation with each one of those on Sunday morning from 8 to 10.
So, Mark, when you know, as a listener listening in, I mean, this show, I can get all the information I need about the NFL draft, how it got here, what's going to happen, you know, where it's going to be, what areas, just listening from 8 to 10 on Sunday morning.
Yeah, not to describe any of them as this, but it's kind of the NFL Draft for Dummies book, the little book that you buy. Everything into a very small and tight package. And it's like those Cliff Notes that Jamie used to use in college, right? She didn't
read
the whole textbook. She just got the... But it'll be fun. It's going to be a fun show.
Do you remember who had this germ of an idea and how long ago it was to bring the NFL Draft to Detroit?
Well, I think back in the day there was probably one or two, but today there's probably 50 that came up with the idea. But the point is so many people have been involved. Kelly Kozel from the Detroit Lions was really the individual that pushes her and Rod Wood from the Detroit Lions. This is an event being done for the Lions, and I think all of us have to remember that. But from that, Visit Detroit, the Detroit Sports Commission, DDP, Rocket, we've invested not only dollars, but hundreds of our team members have been working on this for over a year, some of us since 2018. So there's you go around the city. It's not a one person, it's a one team approach that really tells the story about this in the end. And it's great that this is a celebration of football coming off a year where the Lions have one of their greatest seasons. Michigan wins the national title and sends 18 guys to the combine. So all of those guys are coming to a draft from the University of Michigan in a year where it's right in their backyard and gives them the opportunity to celebrate at a little higher level.
Mark, what was your role? Because obviously with your background, you've done these big events, this basketball game on an aircraft carrier, an outdoor hockey game. You were the first there. So what did you bring to the table?
I just was kind of there throughout all of it. I think one of the things the mayor, you know, credits is how do you make it uniquely different? And when you look at all the events that I've been part of, it has a cause, it has a purpose. And the purpose here was make it different, keep it downtown. And there were a lot of debates on if it comes to Detroit, where should it be? It was at a train station last year. It's been out in public parks or fields that are removed from the downtown area. The closest to downtown probably was when it was down in Tennessee, and they were close, but they weren't in the core of the city. This one's going to be different in that it's a smaller footprint, it's in the core, and then the rest of the city is going to be part of the activation. So the DDP and Bedrock are putting screens up, so no matter where you are in town, you're going to be part of the celebration, part of the draft. You don't necessarily have to be in the footprint, but if you are going to the footprint, make sure you download that NFL One Pass because that's your free ticket into the zone.
And Mark, the city of Detroit will be on a national stage. Some people finding out for the first time what Detroit is all about. You have big announcements this week from your boss, Dan Gilbert, topping off the Hudson's building, and GM saying they're going to move their headquarters there. You got the 5-star hotel coming. It's just a lot going on in the city, and, you know, this is just part of it.
Well, and for once, you know, sometimes the timing isn't right.
Right.
Probably, it seems like the timing, we just hit the zenith on all of those projects, including the train station.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the timing is right. This is not a 3-day event. It's an event that catapults us into other things. If you remember, you know, most all of us were around when we had that era of every year there was something. There was Major League Baseball, All-Star, Super Bowl, Final Four. That went away for 10 years. We haven't had those big events, and now you're starting to see, and it takes 5 years or so to get these lined up. You're seeing the NFL draft. You're seeing USGA events come back out to Oakland Hills. The Rock Mortgage Classic and the Detroit Grand Prix have been really good annual events to help this initiative, but now you got the 27 Final Four. You've got other people outside of Detroit that are starting to see us again, and they're making decisions to bring their biggest events, things that they invest in every year at a high level, to the city of Detroit, which is a huge recognition.
I mean, yeah, it's a big deal. And maybe the NBA draft one day. I mean, All-Star
game. We must get that one. That is a must, no doubt.
You know, when you start out on these things, Mark, there are visions and there are expectations. Having been at the table from the beginning, has this met the expectations? Has it exceeded? I know we don't want to talk about missed opportunities.
Maybe he doesn't know quite yet.
Now,
either.
But yeah, I mean, is this rolling out the way you anticipated?
I think so. I believe so. I was talking to Dan yesterday, and he goes, "Well, we'll see." you know, I think it's one of those events that is set up to be right. It takes a lot of patience on the part of everyone. You know, residents need to be patient. We all have to hopefully look at what's the good when this thing is over of people recognizing Detroit again, seeing it again. But even the NFL has had to display patience because this is a unique setup for them. And it's different, and they can't just come in and basically roll it out like they have every other year. So patience is the word, and then I think high return is going to come and people from across the globe recognizing Detroit through visual, and they're going to come back. They're going to come back not only to visit us, but hopefully to bring business here
well,
in the future.
Well, we're going to be burning incense, making all kinds of incantations, and stroking a rabbit's foot to make sure you got good weather for this thing.
That would be outstanding.
All right. Meantime, we look forward to your show at 8 a.m. on Sunday. Mark Hollis, host of JR Sunday.
We appreciate it.
You guys have a great weekend.
You
too. Have a pretty one. And we'll see you back here bright and early Monday morning at 6 o'clock as we get ready for the draft.